May it please the court, my name is Jerry Goad, appearing on behalf of the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. This case concerns attorney's fees under the Colorado Open Records Act, the Colorado Open Records Act, we sometimes call it CORA. And specifically, this case concerns three subsections of one section of CORA. And that section is 2472204. The subsections that are at issue today are 3A, Roman 13, 5, and 6A. For ease of reference, I will refer to those subsections by their number. For example, section 204, 3A, Roman 13, I will simply call 3A 13. There are basically three issues presented to the court today. The first is whether section 3A 13 under CORA authorizes attorney's fees at all. The second issue is, if so, who's entitled to those fees and how are they calculated?
Do we need to reach that issue, counsel? As I understand your petition, it was brought under subsection 6 as well as subsection 3.
Actually, it was brought under section 3A13 at the behest of the appellee's cross appellants.
Well, as I read it, the paragraph 3 says that the court has jurisdiction under subsections 5 and 6. Subsection 10 says the department has also given authority to petition the district court for protective order under subsection 6. When the opinion of the custodian of the records disclosure would do substantial injury to the public interest, and then in several paragraphs later in the text, it explains why this disclosure would cause a substantial injury. So why isn't this an action under subsection 6?
The reason is twofold. One, again, the appellees, cross-appellants, demanded an action under 3A13.
But you brought it under subsection 6.
Yes, and because 3A13 references the procedures in 6A.
So it was brought under subsection 6, correct?
Yes, I would argue, Your Honor, respectfully, under both sections.
Okay. So, reason why?
I'm sorry?
So, is there any dispute from the state that an action under subsection 6 doesn't give rise to a claim for attorney's fees under the appropriate circumstances?
Actually, there may be an issue with that, Your Honor. As the court may or may not know, the Colorado Supreme Court recently granted cert in the case of Reno v. Marks, a case that is cited by both parties, on a very, if not almost identical issue, and that is whether an award of attorney's fees under subsection 6 is appropriate given that subsection 6 does not specifically provide for attorney's fees. So there is some issue that's before the state Supreme Court right now.
Is that an argument that you made in your briefs?
No, we did not, because that case came out after the briefing was, the grant of cert came out after the briefing was completed. So again, we don't know why the Supreme Court, of course, granted cert, but it raises that issue as to whether or not attorney's fees under subsection 6 are indeed appropriate, since it doesn't specifically provide for such fees.
Well, that's kind of interesting. And of course, the Supreme Court, whatever they say goes, and we must follow. But until then, we do have Reno versus Marks. And we've got this language out of subsection 6A that says that the attorney fees provision of subsection 5 shall not apply to the safe harbor case.
Correct.
And then we've got the language from subsection 5, which says any person of a right may apply to who is denied the right to inspect a record may apply. And it's pretty clear that subsection 5 says that there are rights to attorney fees. So are you saying that if you don't have a safe harbor case where there are no fees, and you don't have a subsection 5 case, but you have the subsection 6 case, which I submit to you that you do, which is the other form of subsection 6 case, you're saying that there's no right to attorney fees in that?
No, I'm not saying that, Your Honor.
Okay.
What I am saying is that under 3A13, there's no right to attorney's fees. And under 6A, there's some doubt under what circumstances you can grant attorney's fees.
What would be the point of having a safe harbor provision if there was no right to attorney's fees?
The point of the safe harbor provision is, as Cora says, is to give the custodian of the records the opportunity, if based upon good faith uncertainty about the status of the documents, after reasonable inquiry and reasonable diligence, the custodian cannot determine whether or not the documents are indeed.
I know, but why would you need to have that provision in subsection 6 if there's no right to attorney's fees under subsection 6?
If I understand the question, Your Honor, the reason.
You wouldn't need a safe harbor because you're not subject to attorney's fees anyway, under your theory.
Well, I'm not saying that attorney's fees are not allowed under 6A. I'm just saying that that issue has been raised with the grant of cert in Reno v. Marks. And of course, as Your Honor noted, we don't know what the Supreme Court is going to say about that yet. But for at this point in time, for purposes of our argument, I'm saying two things. One is 3A13 does not provide for attorney's fees. And I explain why the reference to procedures in 3A13, reference to procedures in 6A, do not apply here.
What authority do you have that procedures don't include attorney's fees?
You know, I don't believe that that provision has been interpreted in court, but I would argue to the court that it is a provision that authorizes attorney's fees. The reference in 5 is an authorization for fees, and it's a post-proceeding authorization. Whereas the reference in 3A13 to the procedures in 6 includes things like an application to the district court, an expedited hearing, notice of the hearing, service of the notice, that the custodian can raise issues and defenses, and it tells the court what it can do with such an application. That, I think, are the procedures that are being referred to in 3A13.
Why? Why do you draw the line at that and not include the other procedure of what could be termed a procedure of awarding attorney's fees? The award of attorney's fees has nothing to do with the substance of the action, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. That's why I believe that the distinction is between procedures that tell the courts how to handle these applications versus a post-proceeding authorization for safe attorney's fees.
But you're not aware of any authority in other areas that would say that that's the case, that we exclude attorney's fees of provisions from the term procedures.
I am not, but I want to be clear that I limited basically my research to the Open Records Act because I believe it's very specific and very unique.
Okay. Mr. Good, I want to make sure I understand your argument. You're telling me that there are 4 different categories of cases in CORA. There's the 6 safe harbor case, where if it's done right, no attorney fees. There's the other 6, where I think you conceded that although the issue is up before the Supreme Court, at least we presume for the other 6 that there are attorney fees. There are the 5s, where there are attorney fees. And then you're saying there's the 3A13s, which would create the 4th status, which because of the subject matter, no attorney fee?
That's correct, Your Honor. 3A13 deals with the deliberative process privilege. And as explained in our briefs, it would appear that the General Assembly determined that, you know, deliberative process privileges are difficult. And therefore, they didn't want to expose the custodian, who in good faith determines that indeed these documents are privileged. Pardon me, I'm just coming off of a cold. And that the legislature clearly could have, obviously, if it wanted to, provided for attorney's fees in 3A13. It did not.
Well, okay. Why can't we read that statute as simply saying, because the deliberative process potential exception is indeed difficult sometimes, what we want to do is to give the applicant the opportunity to have the state start the ball rolling because it is the state that will have to justify the deliberative process. And in that context, the state can do it one of two ways. The state can go in under six and say, you know, we don't know. We're seeking safe harbor here. Or it can say, we know, you don't get it. Which appears to be this case. And by the way, my clerk has just suggested there are 5 minutes left. So I don't understand why 3A13 isn't simply a six.
3A13, Your Honor, provides that an applicant can demand that the custodian file an application. And that if the custodian does so, the procedures in six then apply. And the safe harbor provision in this case, I think, is illusory or irrelevant. Because, as you note, it provides that the custodian must make a good faith determination that it can decide. In this case, there was no doubt in our minds that these were, in fact, valid privileges, and the district court agreed. It ruled that all of our claims of privilege, with one insignificant exception, were indeed validly privileged.
What about the 45 documents you produced?
The 45 documents produced, the court never ruled on those. Those were
right.
Privileged documents with EPA, and we consulted with EPA about those. The state and EPA waived their privileges to those documents and released them. Under Benefield, an applicant, a successful applicant, is one that secures a court order ordering the release of improperly withheld documents.
Actually, Benefield, with all respect to the folks upstairs, is a little bit, says a couple of things. It says what you say, but it also says the only condition to obtaining a fee award is that the court find is that there not have been an order finding that the right of inspection was proper. Then there's also some language that says you got to get an order. So why do you pick one over the other other than an obviously?
Well, I believe it says in a couple of places that it requires a court order for the production of an improperly withheld document.
And it says in a couple of places just the contrary. And I'm not saying I know the answer, but it says in paragraph 13 that it's the statute is clearly structured as a conditional sentence with a single condition upon the satisfaction of which two obligations are imposed. The sentence says one is it says that unless the court finds, or equally if the court fails to find, that the denial of the right of inspection was proper, it is then required to do the two things, one of which is award of costs. But the single sole condition, the court says, is if the court fails to find, or if the court finds, so you're looking at it in the negative and the positive. So why don't we follow that language?
I believe that the language in paragraph 14, or maybe it's on page 14, as well as the language in pages 26 and 27 is more direct. It essentially reflects the court's hope that a successful applicant is one who obtains an order. And obviously that's the provision that we would argue urge the court to follow.
So under your theory of the case, the custodian of records has the ability to drag out a proceeding. Let's assume it wasn't done under, let's assume you're either that it wasn't brought under subsection 3 or that your interpretation of subsection 3 is incorrect. Under your theory of the case, the custodian always has the option to drag out and litigate to the fullest as long as the day before the hearing or any ruling comes down from the court, they release the documents. In that case, they would not be subject to attorney's fees. Is that your theory of the case?
No,
theory of the statute?
With all due respect, no, it's not. This case is about the documents that were withheld and the court's ruling on them. It's not about the documents that were released originally.
Well, when the proceeding was filed, all 101 documents were withheld, as I read the petition.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then, so it was only several months later, indeed, as I understand it, the day before the hearing, that the documents were actually provided to CK. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
So this sort of rewards delay, doesn't it?
You know, it could be looked at that way, and although I know it's not in the record, well, actually, it is in the record. The correspondence early on with EPA, EPA was in the midst of force reductions, budget cuts, and frankly, it just took them a long time to decide how they wanted to handle these joint and previous documents.
I understand. I'm not necessarily saying you were trying to delay, but I'm saying the effect is that deliberate delay could be rewarded under your interpretation of the statute.
I guess, in effect, it could be. But again, the bottom line is, we believe the court, Supreme Court in Benfield said, you don't get fees unless you get an order for the release of an improperly withheld document. In this case, there was one order that said one document was improperly withheld, and that same order said only one document needed to be released.
Okay.
I'm out of time. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, counsel. Counselor, if when you get established there, I'd be interested in your understanding of Benfield, given that there seem to be two different tests that the court has described.
Yes, Your Honor, thank you. May I introduce myself and co-counsel? My name is Travis Stills with Virgin Conservation Law, representing Colorado Citizens Against Toxic Waste, and I have Jeff Parsons, co-counsel, with me today. Western Mining Action Project. I also have Sharon Cunningham, Kathy Meyer, board members who testified regarding the public interest and public access to the public records concerning groundwater at the Cotter Mill that's next to the neighborhood in Lincoln Park. The Benfield decision addressed 2045, and as was discussed, paragraph 13 is where the court focused on its central holding, which is the unless clause of 2045. And it's quoted in there, and I'll read it briefly. Unless the court finds that the denial of the right of inspection was proper, it shall order the custodian to permit such inspection and shall award court costs and reasonable attorney's fees to the prevailing applicant. And as the court is reviewing what is referred to as mandatory and in some places automatic attorney's fees provisions, it looked very closely at not cherry-picked language, but the full intent, purpose, and scope of the Colorado Open Records Act. And the court, like the legislature, and I believe that was pointed out at footnote 2 of the Benfield decision, came to the conclusion that some of the legislative history considered that to be draconian, considered automatic and mandatory fees whenever there was disclosure of documents, unless the custodian got that order, was too much. Well, they put in the safe harbor provision. The legislature made accommodations for situations where it is a close call or where it is complex. The Colorado Open Records Act embraces judicial review. It depends on judicial review. It's integral to the structure of the act. The Benfield case, like the Reno case, recognized that. They understood that assistance of counsel is integral to the statutory right of an applicant for CORA access to documents to appear and the right to be heard. And I would submit that without the fees provision, without assistance of counsel, the district court would be faced with a one-sided presentation of the case. This case provides a very good example of that. A complex argument presented by the Attorney General's office without a countervailing argument made from the perspective of the public and the public interest in the case. The fees provision, as recognized in Benfield, as recognized in the legislative history, as recognized in Reno, embraces private attorneys general to come forward and represent citizens such as my clients and others who have an interest in knowing the business of government, knowing that that stays in the public. The Benefield decision is focused on 2045, and the one way that a custodian can avoid fees, which is to gain an order. Let me make sure I get the language right. Finding that inspection was proper, or denial of the right of inspection was proper. That was not done in this case. That's where 2045 comes in. 204-6A. Start stacking up some of these statutes. Provides, as was discussed earlier, the bifurcated custodian's action, which is a safe harbor action, and the custodian's action in Reno that can be triggered from various miscellaneous places, can be triggered by the custodian, it can be triggered by the letter, as it was in this case, from my client to the custodian, asking them to seek judicial review of the withholding because it didn't appear to be proper. And in fact, the way the case played out, that turned out to be the case. The request was made in January of 2003. The statutory deadline for releasing these documents ran February 7th. That's a 7-day deadline laid out at CRS 2472-2033A. There was considerable back and forth, disagreement on what is a legitimate withholding under the circumstances. And in the end of February 2013, CCAT requested that pursuant to 204-6A, which is referenced as you referred to in 203-A-13, that the custodian initiate the action. Well, when you look at the applicant here is CCAT, and you get into some language that gets a little crossways within the statute, but the applicant is generally referred to as CCAT throughout the person seeking the documents.
Excuse me, Mr. Steele,
yes.
May I interrupt you at that point? Because I'm looking at Benefield, and in paragraph 2 and paragraph 21, the Supreme Court says that because 2045, when properly construed, mandates an award of costs and reasonable attorney's fees in favor of any person who applies for and receives an order from the district court. In what manner, if any, did CCAT apply to the district court for an order requiring the custodian to permit inspection of the record that you sought?
In several ways, Your Honor. And if I could also mention, when 204-5 refers to prevailing applicant, that's a separate one of the four categories of ways that a attorney's fee provision can pop up. Our position is it popped up here through 204-6, and then which brings in 204-5 by reference. So an application is not necessary, but even if one were to read Benefield, and I think that was also addressed in Reno, which mentioned that 204-6 attorney's fees was a matter, custodian's fees was a matter of first impression. The application process was triggered by the letter sent by CCAP seeking judicial review, and that was Exhibit AE admitted into the record, 2013, specifically referencing both the failure of the custodian to provide the specific sworn statement required in 2043A13, and asserting that likely the withholding was not proper anyway. It took weeks, almost, I don't know the number of weeks, but it wasn't until April when the CDPHE finally appealed to the district court. The request was in January, we're in April now. So they applied in that way. The whole judicial review process was started by CCAP's request that CDPG seek judicial or custodian's action under 204.
Excuse me. There is a procedure under one of the subsections, is there not, where the applicant such as yourself, CCAT, could have initiated proceedings in the district court requesting an order?
Yes,
they be allowed to inspect public records which you wish to inspect?
Yes, there is. And I think that was not filed because the procedure, the judicial review procedure was triggered, was filed. I think it was mentioned before. It did make sense, and it does make sense for the government to go first in these kinds of cases. They have the documents, they have a burden. It didn't make sense, and you can see there was quite a bit of briefing went on in the early part of this case on how exactly this should play out. But in court went forward, and in that briefing, CCAT did ask for that order. They did ask that an order be issued stating that the withholding was not proper. And that eventually did come, but also there was the interim orders for CDPG to confer and do those things necessary to determine if public interest would be harmed by the release of the documents.
But in Benefield, it was the person, or actually the party, interested in seeing the public records that initiated and made the application to the district court for an order to be able to inspect those public records.
That's correct. And Reno is the companion case that looks at a custodian initiated. With the insertion of 204.3A.13, you have a bit of a hybrid because in those cases, by letter to the custodian, mandates that the custodian then file with the district court. And in our read of 204.6, if they've made a determination, they are not allowed to go in under the safe harbor provision. The facts here are that they withheld, right down the line with Reno that way, they withheld. There was a custodian's action, and there were documents released in an order determining that those documents withheld in February were properly withheld, was not obtained by the custodian.
Yes,
that's where 204.5 comes in my view, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you. Let me ask you another question about the effect of paragraph 21 in the field, which repeats paragraph 2 about applying for and receiving an order from the district court, and then goes into directions about remand, saying that the district court should exercise its discretion in determining the amount of attorney's fees to the Republican Party as prevailing applicant. And it says entitled in light, or which it is entitled in light of its partial success in this litigation. How do you read that when you put the partial success language with the language in that paragraph about receiving an order from the district court? It appears to me that you received an order, CCAT received an order for the inspection of one document, that there was no order required for the inspection of 45 other documents. So what is the level of CCAT's success under this terminology in your case?
I guess from the record, 232 through 240, there were four documents released.
There were four, a couple of them were copies of each other.
And there was redactions, there was some alterations on them, so they were unique documents that had to go through the process. That's enough. One document is enough under Benefield.
So you think you get 100% of your fees then?
No.
Okay. I think that's what we're trying to figure out. Assuming you were to prevail, we conclude that you're prevailing, you get it for 1/4, or you get it for 46 or 49?
Does that make a difference?
Yes. It can make a difference. And since we've moved, and again, the 204.5 and 204.6, now the Benefield remands for the question of reasonable amount of fees. And a mechanical 1 out of 100 computation is not what is used. in the case law that's cited in the briefs under Hensley and others, the determination is based on analysis of the case, what was necessary to achieve the outcome in the case. The goal in these cases is not the order. The order ends up being what is fought over. The goal in the case is obtaining access to records that will not cause substantial harm to the public interest. 49 of those 401 that were withheld were obtained. It should, to me, that's full success. Our position wasn't that 101 must, under all circumstances, be released. The position in the case was that the judicial review process needs to go through. We need to have the justification, we need to have the hearing, we need to have the in-camera review. And when you view the litigation as a whole, which is what is supposed to be done, then the determination of the reasonableness of fees comes out. One document is a trigger request, and that's what's been argued over. The question of what is reasonable in light of the circumstances of the case should not be done on a mechanistic basis if you got one out of 100, because they would have held 10,000, and the two that were really important that we wanted were in there. We get 2/100, 10,000 of our fees. It sets up a bizarre possibility there, and avoids a reasonableness standard. And I'm out of time.
Okay. Thank you.
I guess I'll submit the cross motions on the papers.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. Thank you very much for your time. Thank you very much for your arguments. We appreciate them. The case will stand submitted, and the opinion will issue in due course. Set journey home.